Welcome to Culture at Work, the podcast that explores how to maintain a strong corporate culture in a rapidly changing world. I'm your host, Tim Carroll, inviting you to learn from industry leaders on how to build an exciting culture to bring people back to the office and inspire them like never before. On today's podcast, we have Willie Spears. Willie is the owner and operator of the Willie Spears Experience, a professional development company out of Florida. His goal is to add value to the lives of others through high-energy presentations. Prior to starting his business, he spent 20 years in education as an award-winning teacher and coach. He has written 16 books, and he delivers close to 30 presentations a month in close to 10 states. Buckle up, because this is a high-energy conversation. Let's go. Willie, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited. We as a company had the opportunity, of course, to have you speak at our kickoff. And I have since deemed it the Willie Spears Experience, because that's what it is. I've got to say right off the bat, for anybody listening, find Willie Spears and have him run to your business and have him speak, because it is fantastic. And I think you've made it very easy for me in the years to come. They just want to have you back every year.
I'm fine with that, man. It was my first time in that great city of yours, and I was honored to do it. You had some great people that were there, and they were so welcoming and so fun and inviting, and they wanted to grow. They wanted to get better. And as I said, when I was a coach, if I have an athlete that wants to get better, then the battle's won already, you know? And so you have a great culture there. I pride myself in being able to recognize culture when I walk in a building or any organization. And right off the bat, I can tell that you guys cared about one another and they wanted to be there at Working Spaces. So, man, thanks for having me.
Of course. You know, you touch on something interesting there. Is that skill or will issue, right? Is it a skill issue or is it a will issue? Because if it's a will issue, we're going to have a problem. If it's a skill issue, we can fix that.
I can teach you. Yep.
That's right. That's right. So start off the first question every time with everybody the same way. And it's very basic. It's the most basic question, but somehow seems to be the hardest to answer for most people. I don't think it'll be hard for you, but how do you define culture?
Well, I love the word. I know it's become a buzzword over the last few years, but for me, culture is any agreed upon set of rules, or a better word than rules is behaviors. It's behaviors that we all come on to one accord. We all agree that these are going to be the behaviors that we adopt, that we cultivate, and that we continue to work on. In other words, so culture is not a destination, it's a process. So it's not what I want, it's not what you want, it's what we have come together to say these are the behaviors. It could be values, could be philosophy, could be mission statement. All those things are in the word behaviors for me, and it's what we do every day. And there's a perceived culture and there's a real culture. The perceived culture is what I just gave as a definition. The real culture is when you have someone on the outside come in and spend 2 or 3 days at your organization and they write down what they see, and that tells you what your actual culture is. And so sometimes we have this idea of what we think we are, and then there's a reality. But I just believe it's an agreed upon set of behaviors that we all come together to work on as an organization.
How often, because you're in companies, school districts, sports teams, how often do you see, and I just take my own experience with you. You know, we talked ahead of time and we had a little debrief, and then you came in and talked to our team and did a lot of research on us, right? That was one of the most impressive things for me, is the amount of research that you did on our company. Stuff that I know I didn't tell you. And so how often do you come into an organization and you hear one thing during that pre-meeting and you see something very different?
Too many. Over 50%. Ooh. I spoke to one team, I won't say the name, a Division I team. And after 15 minutes of talking to the coach, I realized the coach was the problem. Mm. So how do you go into an organization that wants you to add value to what they do, when the person who hired you is the one that needs the professional development. It was very difficult. And so they sat in on my talk with the team, them and their assistants. And so I was able to paint pictures and scenarios and use analogies where they had to take accountability for some of the things I was saying. But they were the problem. And it's going to shock you. I predicted this. I predicted it. I you can get one of my buddies on here right now, Tyrone Bowe, where I told him, I said, Coach, they won't finish the season. He said, come on. You say they're not going to finish the season. This team did not finish their season. They didn't have enough players. They had an issue. The coach was let go, was told they could step down their own, the whole step. But I saw it way earlier. And so culture has an odor. And it can be a fragrance that we enjoy, or it can stink. And I can smell an odor that is expired instantly. I can just tell. You can't fake it. I knew when I went in. So I'm gonna take one question I asked the team. So I, like you said, I do research. And I'm not a good enough speaker to not do research. So I spoke at a school the other day. And the day before, I went and drove around the community. So I grew up in a trailer. And when I talk about my goals in life, I talk about how I didn't want to live in a trailer for the rest of my life. Well, if most of the community in that school live in trailers, you have to be very careful how you talk about that, because someone could be offended. So I drove around the community to see what type of houses was in this community. I did my research online, how many were they, what they call Title I schools, which is a low socioeconomic environment. The school facilities were great, but it was a very, very poor culture, very poor community with a lot of apathy and a lack of empathy for one another. So I learned these things by going to early. I just went on their social media pages. I thought the top players, I went on their social media pages. I took notes. I did this for 2 weeks. And then I went on their personal pages. It went on their high school pages. And then when I got in there, I asked questions. All right, John, what's Paul's cat's name? Paul got a cat? Yeah, y'all won't win a game. Like, how in the world y'all play the same position, y'all with each other every single day, and you have no idea that he had a cat, and you don't know the cat's name, and the cat's name is in his profile on his social media, and he talks about the cat all the time. And his posts are hashtag the cat's name. The cat's name is Oreo. It's a black and white cat. So how do I know that I'm a stranger? So it was so many examples of that. So I started offering him money. I said, here's 20 bucks. 20 bucks if you could tell me his girlfriend's name. 20 bucks. I don't even know. Well, so y'all don't care about each other because you're together all the time, you know? And so certain things are, they weren't a team. They were a bunch of people who, this was a mid-major school. They were a bunch of people who really thought they should be at a better school, and the evidence is there. They didn't maximize their talent because they really didn't want to be there. And a lot of it had to do with the leadership. You know, everything rises and falls on leadership. No John Maxwell quote. And so I just know I can smell it. When you walk in a room, you ever watch Law and Order? And they say, yeah, been a few days. They can tell, right? So when I walk in a culture, walk in a room, an environment, I can smell. Sometimes they try to cover up the smell. The person talks to me on the phone. They're talking all proper. Oh, yeah, Willie, we do this. And here are our core values. And we do a great job with this. But when I walk in there, there's no eye contact. No one greets you. One coach talked about how everybody respects them. Everybody called the coach by their first name, called him buddy, called him boy. Like, they don't respect you. You have a title. And so, again, it's easy for me to see. Sometimes it's harder to convey the right message because you don't want to hurt someone's feelings, especially the person that hired you.
So what I'm hearing from this is entitlement.
100%.
And how detrimental do you feel that word is, that mentality is to an organization, to a team, to a school, that entitlement that I deserve anything I get and I deserve better? How does that play out in your world?
We're all entitled. We don't want to admit it, but if someone at your job walks in and the air conditioner is broken, after about an hour, someone's going to come to you and say, hey, Tim, you know that the air is not working. Now, of course, you know, you can feel it too, but they are entitled to a comfortable room. We have all been in, no one would buy a car and they say, this is a great car, but there's no air conditioning. We're entitled. We automatically believe this is supposed to happen. So what happens in organizations is when we try our best to provide a harmonious culture, especially coming out of COVID, now we're going over the top to make sure everyone feels comfortable. When you talk about work-life balance, when you talk about making sure you look out for them outside of work and not overworking them and caring about them as a person, all those things. Well, now they become entitled. These were extra things. Now they're the norm. And so when I was a college coach, when I was a college football coach, you didn't have to ask, is he a hard worker? That was a given. That's like asking, does he walk? Like, why am I recruiting a guy that's not a hard worker? But it's changed. Now a hard worker is an added bonus. Coach, he chews gum and walks at the same time, and he's a hard worker. So we're so entitled that now the norm has not become extraordinary. Well, if you're elite, the extraordinary is your norm. Doing extra, that's your norm. Coming in early, that's your norm. Staying late, that's your norm. But now that's not the case. So most of the businesses I speak to, spoke to State Farm last month, McDonald's last month, Chick-fil-A last year, the Southern Company last year, spoke with you guys, entitlement seeps in like a cancer. And if you don't cut it out, it's going to eat away at your entire organization. Everything from how come we don't have parking spaces here? How come I had to walk this far? Why didn't you pay for my food on the last trip? All these things that you were doing to show them you appreciate them, sometimes they feel like you owe me that. And that person has a worker mentality, not an owner's mentality. The owner mentality says, I'm not entitled. I don't care how much money I have. I got to go get it every single day. That's the owner mentality. The worker mentality is, I'm just here punching a clock, and they better treat me this way, this way, this way, this way. And you need people around you that have an ownership mentality. Even if they don't ever plan to be an owner, they need to think like, this is my business. This is our business, not it's Tim's business, and I'm working for Tim. No, I'm working with Tim, and together we're going to take this thing to another level.
A very, very smart man once told me that you can't have someone feel like you need them more than they need you. And in an organization. And that's a tough thing for some people. But I think post COVID, you hit the nail on the head. I think that's where things started going. This entitlement mindset took off just a little bit.
And now, why can't I just work at home? You would never say that before COVID. You would never say to your boss, can you pay me the same amount of money you've been paying me, but I'm going to work from my house every day. But now we feel entitled. So we gave you a little rope, and you want the whole thing. You know, I had a guy work for me, Tim. My coach comes out of me sometimes, you know, and so I have to watch myself sometimes, but the coach comes out of me. So we weren't getting the results that we needed. And in our weekly Tuesday meeting, I called this gentleman's name, and I said, hey, what's going on? We're on Zoom. And this is what he said. He said, well, the last couple of days have been rough on me. I said, whoa, I didn't know, man. Did someone pass away? No, I just needed to take a couple mental health days. I said, nothing wrong with that. Nothing. I believe in that. Look at our manual. That's awesome. However, you're expecting pay for those 2 days, right? And if I wouldn't have asked you this question, you wouldn't have let me know that for the last 2 days, you did no work at all. So I'm telling people he's going to get back with you. I'm telling people he's going to send a contract. I'm telling people he's going to get the flight plans taken care of. You're taking 2 full days off. And I ask him, where else can you do that? Can you do that at the bank? Can you do that at the hospital? Where else? Because when I hired him, I asked him, what's your 3 to 5 year plan? And he wants to work in professional sports. I said, so if you were working with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, would you take 2 days off without letting them know? I said, the problem is they didn't hire you. I did. And so you're not working with me, you're working for me. Because if you was working like this was your, let's say his name was John, the John Smith experience, then you would not have taken 2 days off. Because you know what? I've never taken 2 days off. I can't. We're going to lose the game. You know, and so, but what happened, he just thought that that was okay. And again, it just wasn't a good fit. A great guy, wasn't a good fit. My daughter has a pair of Jordans, size 6. I love them. They're black and gold. They're awesome. But I can't wear them. Not a good fit. It'd be uncomfortable. It may look good. So a lot of times things look good, but it's not a good fit. And so he didn't last with us. But yeah, I that entitlement thing, and I fight it. I'm telling you, Tim, I won't fly first class. I won't do it. I'm not doing it. I'm not. Because how can I go into a rural school and add value when I just finished eating caviar, riding first class, and I rented a luxury SUV or a luxury vehicle to come drive to your school. I can't relate. So the grind has to stay there. I have to stay in that pocket or I'll forget what got us here. And then we lose it all.
That's great. Want to change course just a little bit. You do a lot of work with schools. You've talked a little bit about it here. And I'm curious because we do a lot of work with schools as well. And we do space and we truly do believe that space can affect culture and all of that. But I'm interested in your experience. You speak to educators all the time. You speak to schools. What's the difference do you see in building culture in a corporate setting versus an educational setting?
Great question. Leadership is ownership and ownership is leadership. In the schools, they have a guaranteed client that does not want the product they're selling. That's very different than what you have. You have a client that realizes they need a new makeover with their furniture. They may not know what they need. They may not know how to order it or what it's supposed to look, but they realize they have a need. The client in the school, they don't even want to be there.
Right.
And so you have to convince them that later on, way down the line, you're going to need this. And the smart ones know that you're lying. They know we don't need the Pythagorean theorem. We're never going to use it. We don't need the periodic table. We can ask Siri. We don't need to know anything about states and capitals. Google will tell us. So how do you motivate someone that knows they don't need your product? That's different. So that culture, and the answer is the same for both, by the way, that culture needs to realize the relationship is going to be the reason we get the results we desire. In the corporate world, what the corporate worker has to realize, if I'm the cashier, or if I'm in marketing, or if I'm in sales, or if I'm in facilities or logistics, if I don't do my job to the best of my ability, then everyone suffers. Where in a school, the teacher is the CEO of the classroom, and they're judged about what happens in that classroom. No matter what they do at the national level with education, the state level, the district level, even if the principal says, I want every kid to have no hats on, I want every kid no headphones, they better make sure they're on task. All that sounds good, but I have in control of my class all day. The two things they have in common is both building a relationship and both is all about numbers. The quantitative data is going to tell us if you are doing a good job or not. And so you can say, we're doing a great job of working spaces. Go 6 months without selling any furniture. We're going to find out, no, we're not doing that good of a job. No one's buying any furniture. Everyone's deciding they want to stand up in an empty room instead of sit down on beautiful furniture. And so those two things that make it different. What happened to me, Tim, I'll say this real quick. I really thought I was a sports speaker and corporate. That's in my mind, if you would have asked me, you know, who's your main audience? I would have said athletic teams and corporate America, because I had gotten a few big corporate clients early on. So I really thought that was my lane. And then back to school professional development kicked off, and a bank president asked me, would I speak to his wife's school? I'm an educator. So I'm like, this is, duh, I would love to. That became my lane. And so you all may sell furniture to different people. Nothing wrong with that. But if you find a lane, it's important to master that lane. I heard Tiger Woods say, you know, I worked on the part of my game I was the strongest at, not that I was the weakest at. And some people thought that was crazy. So no. I'm already strong here. I'm going to be the best here. Yeah. And so when I realized, so I tell you this, and cut me off when I start talking too much.
But impossible.
Yeah, thank you, brother. So people reach out to me all the time. I want to be a speaker. And I help them. I say, man, the first call, there's no charge. You know, we'll talk as much as you want. And I used to not charge at all, but people started taking advantage of my time. So I would talk to them 4 or 5 times. And then on the 6th time, they hadn't done one thing I asked them to do. I said, wait a minute now, no disrespect. I'm setting my calendar based on you, and you're not executing anything I ask you to do. You just want a buddy. I don't have enough buddies. I don't need to talk on the phone with people all day. So I said, after the first call, we're going to talk about, you know, we'll set aside time, but we'll charge you a little bit for my time. But I was with a guy the other day. I'll tell you his name. Maybe you'll bring him in one day. Robert Britton. You can look him up. Great speaker. So right now he works for the National College Board of Students. He's one of their speakers. and he wants to speak on his own. All right, I hope I'm not ruining his thunder with his organization, but he wants to speak on his own. And so we met the other day. This is no joke. We're meeting with him and his team. We're meeting at Nukes. That's where he wanted to meet at. We're talking, and I told him, I said, you have to get more reps. The more reps you get, you'll find out who you really are. It's easy to say who you think you are, but as you get more reps in the speaking game, you'll realize my message resonates with this group more. My message resonates with this. So I said, with me, I realized that my group is teachers. That's my group from age 32, 33, till about 57, teachers, females. But I didn't think that I would resonate with those. I would think African-American males, athletes, somebody faith-based, former football players. No, women, right? So as I'm saying that, Tim, this is no exaggeration. I posted on my Facebook page. As I'm saying that, a man walks up to me. Excuse me, I hate to interrupt you guys, but are you Willie Spears? I said, yes, sir. How can I help you? My wife's a teacher, and she heard your voice, and she said, that's the guy I watch on TikTok all the time, but I'm afraid to go over there. He said, would you mind just shaking my wife's hand? I said, man, I would love to, man. You made my day. When she walked up, Robert said, she's the demographic. That's her. Like, she's been to a T. And so you have to get reps up to know who you really are and then master that lane. And that's why we do so many schools, because we realize that's who we are, whether we want to admit it or not.
You know, it's funny because John Maxwell will say, you know, people, you know, always say they want to do what I do. And, you know, you want to do what I do, but do you want to know what I do, what I did
that's
to
right.
get to what I do?
Yep.
You want to do the did.
Yep. I love that. He said he was signing books somewhere. And the guy kept saying, I mean, I'm going to be just like you. I just got my MBA. I'm going to be just like you. And he said, okay, buddy. Okay. But the guy kept going on. He said, well, you want to do what I do, but are you willing to do what I did?
Yeah.
And no one's willing to do that part, Tim.
Like, that's right.
I've been fired. Have you been fired yet? One guy told me he wanted to be an educational speaker, and great guy. He came to two places I spoke, sat in the audience, took notes, and he kept saying, man, we're just the light. He kept saying that. We're just the light. We're just the light. He was talking about my delivery. And so after about three times of us talking, I finally admitted to him. I said, listen, this is what you don't see. The delivery is really smoke and mirrors. I know what the audience needs to hear because of all the research I did when no one was looking. I said, you don't see that part. Like, this community, their best athlete ever died in a drowning a year and a half ago. I have a joke where I talk about one of my players who, and the purpose of the joke is to talk about knowing the correct way to communicate your point. And his mother said he can't go with you all to the beach because last year he drowned. And I said, excuse me, ma'am, we talking about the same kid? Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. He drowned last year, so I'm not letting him go on any more swimming trips. Well, it was funny because he actually didn't drown and die because he's still there. But that wouldn't have been a funny joke with that audience because they had a kid actually die. But how do I know that? I stalk their social media page. I drive around the town. I read articles. I said, you see the delivery. And so you thought, I'm going to be there. I'm going to do that. And then I told him, this hurt his feelings. Then I said, sir, with all due respect, I have a bachelor's degree in communications. So I went to school to learn how to do what I'm doing, how I enunciate, how I slow down, how I raise my voice. I learned this in school for 4 years. And then I went and earned a master's degree in education. Then I spent 20 years in education, and I've written over 15 books. That resume gets me in the door. Then the part you see has to be done well. You want to do that part, but I failed a certification test to be a teacher 12 times. Are you willing to take the test 12 times? No, you're not. So everybody wants to be on top of the mountain, but nobody wants to climb.
That's right. They want the elevator.
Right, 100%. Everybody wants to be in the elevator. And for me, I'm afraid of the elevator. It's too easy. Something's going to happen.
That's right.
I'd rather climb up and have my legs burning, my glutes burning, everything burning. But when I get up there, I know I earned this spot.
That's right. I mean, if something's so easy to get, I question it every time. So back to the teachers. You said something interesting there about the principal. Who affects the culture of a school more, the principal or the teachers or the students?
Great question. That's the question that the superintendent should be asking.
Yeah.
And so the answer is the students.
Yeah.
The reason is because they're the common denominator. The teachers are interchangeable. The principal, unfortunately, if he take a bad school and does well, they move him to another school. Superintendent may be elected or appointed every 4 years. The principal can move. So they can't be the ones that dictate the culture. However, the students all do what they're allowed to do. So the students determine the culture, but only by what they are allowed to do. So if they're allowed to be an average student, that's the culture. If they're pushed to be an excellent student, then that's the culture. The leadership determines that. The problem with school systems, Tim, is that in your organization, if someone is not up to snuff, you can let them go.
Right.
You have evaluations, expectations. Listen, sir, we really like you, but according to the expectations that we had when we brought you in and the evaluations, we've done 3 evaluations with you. We've documented everything. You've been late to work. You're in sales. You haven't sold anything in 8 months. Like, you can let them go.
Promote them to customer.
I like that. I'm stealing that. You got a promotion, buddy. You're going to be a customer. And here's a link. You can click on that.
That's right.
So what happens in schools, though, some teachers have tenure.
Yeah.
And they know it. And they know I don't have to be my best. I've actually been in meetings when I'm hired as a consultant. I'm not as, for lack of a better word, funny. When the cameras are off, we're real. And I look at their lesson plans. And I asked a woman once, man, what's the difference between this lesson plan? This is 2002. What's the difference between this lesson plan and the one that you have from 2012? And she said, well, I'm teaching the same subject. I said, yes, ma'am, but do you realize how much the world has changed in 10 years? like students today, because she had on one of her points, it was like it was 3 columns. She had the word facts as one way they could turn their work in. That wasn't even relevant in 2012. But it's laziness. And in school, you can afford to be lazy because it's a teacher shortage. And the teachers know that. And unfortunately, in schools, they take the top teachers and give them the best students. So in school, they really believe if you're a great teacher, you should teach the best students. And it should be the opposite. If you're the best teacher, you should get the worst student. They need the best teacher. We give the worst students the worst teacher. And when I mean worst, I don't mean she's a bad person. He's a bad. They have no experience. Right. They were hired last year. They're on a provisional contract, you know. And so we give them the students that misbehave the most. And then we give the students that have no motivation. They don't care about school. They have no support at home. And we give that teacher with 2 years of experience, fresh out of college, we give her 35 of those. And we wonder, how come you can't meet AYP? How come you can't? What's wrong with you? And then this other teacher got the best groceries and she's making the best meal and she gets teacher of the year. And we're like, man, she's dynamic. Yeah. She has students, the mom and dad have doctorate degrees. Yeah, she's doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't get it. The people who run schools, they don't get it. And so it's a blessing for me to go in there and try to help. I don't have all the answers, but I've been in a lot of schools. And so I've seen what works and what doesn't work.
We're going to break away for just a quick message and we'll be right back after this. At Working Spaces, we do much more than just sell furniture. We immerse ourselves in the culture of each and every client, and then create spaces that inspire creativity, inspire productivity, and inspire connectivity. So if you're looking to create an office space that inspires your employees to want to come back to the office, collaborate face-to-face, and do their best work every day, contact Working Spaces. Working Spaces, the innovative leader in office furniture and design since 1999, now in 6 markets nationwide. Welcome back to Culture at Work. Do you think that, and have you seen this, that an underperforming school can have a good culture, or is it only tied to performance?
Okay, so elementary and middle school, no. High schools, because of sports, can override a low academic number or result. Because, like football, for instance, football is so big in some schools, yeah. It starts school year. And so when we talk about culture, the measuring stick of culture, and I have a rubric I use, it has to do with behavior, attendance, which is truancy, and it has to do with academic performance. Well, if your football team is good, The cheerleaders are excited. The color guard is excited. The band's excited. It changes the culture of the school. If you start off with that, then what happens is wherever you are going to be academically, you're going to be a little bit better because students are going to want to come to school. They have pride in their school. They're excited about being there. And so even if you don't have the best teachers or even the best principal, the right football coach can change the culture of your school because football, especially in certain parts of the country, is the front porch to the high school. You see it before you see the professor or the teacher or whatever. And so I've seen students, I've seen schools, when you look at their paperwork, and I was an administrator for a long time, you're like, there's nowhere in the world you guys are successful. You look like, what? How do you know if you're doing a good job or not? Like, they have no way of, and then you look, their football team's so good. And that makes everybody excited. They're proud to be a Tiger or Wildcat or a Bulldog. And they come to school. And they don't want to misbehave because if you misbehave, you get suspended. You can't go to the game. Or they use football as a leverage. Some of the knuckleheads, they're on a football team. They have to behave to stay on the football team. So that cuts down in the issues. And when they behave, the whole school follows suit. Or if I get two referrals, I can't be in the band anymore. Their identity is tied to the success of that team, and that overrides them not having maybe a great leader to help them academically. In middle school and elementary school, it's not that big. No matter how good your sports team is, it's not big enough to override that. So what I found is without great leadership in the middle school, you're going to have great issues because most of your behavior problems are female girls, or females in the middle school. They just don't know. They're having this hormonal imbalance, and they don't know how to express themselves. So they can't say, hi, Johnny, I like you. They got to hit you and run. You know, they got to kick you. They got to punch you. They just don't know how to express themselves. And so school is not important to them. Being like, having the right shoes, having the right hairstyle, all that's the most important thing. So that kind of can change your culture if you don't have a principal who gets that.
So I hear you making the case that the first thing any principal needs to do in order to fix their school is sink all their money into a really, really good football coach. And that's going to be step one.
And I'm telling, at the high school, I have the data to back it up. At a high school level, if you football coach right, it changes your school faster than anything else. Think about it. Go to a high school and hire the best English teacher. How many people would that affect?
Right.
Hire the best math teacher. So you hire the best math teacher, you're only reaching a small population of your school because everyone in your school can't do trigonometry. But if you hire the right football coach, and I don't mean wins and losses, I mean a football coach that doesn't just sit in their office, that has an effect on the whole school, right, that walks the hall and fist bump all the students. And how's it going? Good to see you this morning. Pull your pants up. Y'all did a good job over there, cheerleaders. That's infectious because we worship it. I mean, tell me who the president of Alabama University is. Tell me who the president of Clemson is. Who's the president of Florida State? Who's the president of Ohio State? Michigan won a national championship. Tell me who the president of the university is. No one knows and no one cares. But we know Jim Harbaugh. Even the average fan knows the name of the head coach because they have so much influence. And so the way you change culture is find out who has the influence and then use them to navigate what you want. So when I wrote the book, Culture Creators, what we talk about is creating your desired culture. Everyone has a culture. My man, what I'm talking about, baby. That's what I'm talking about. I love it. I love it. So it's a short read,
I got the book. That's what I just showed him. I got the book.
Yes, sir. Thank you, baby. But so what I've learned was I played for a coach, Steve Harden, may he rest in peace. He passed away. I thought he was crazy when I played for him. I thought he's over the top. And then I worked for him and I saw the method to the madness. Then I became a head coach. And then I said, oh, now I see. Now I see why. And so Dr. Tim Elmore says that this generation, they need to know why. You know, like my dad, he's 73. His mom told him to take out the trash. He just went and did it. You know, me, I'm 46. My dad told me, I kind of sucked my teeth, mumbled under my breath, but I did it anyway, just reluctantly. My son, I could tell him, he says, Dad, I'm playing the game. Give me 1 minute. I said, son, take out the trash. Dad, give me 5 more minutes, Dad, promise. So it's all this talking back. And in his mind, it's not being disrespectful. And so they need to know why. So when I say, son, the garbage runs tomorrow, and last week you forgot to put it out, and we were stuck with this garbage for an extra 4 days, I need you to put the garbage out by the road right now and not try to wait till in the morning. Then it's like, okay, Dad, hey guys, I got to pause the game. I got to take this trash out. right? So I can say, I'm the man of the house. If I say it in gold, I don't shouldn't have to explain it, but then you're not going to get the results you want.
That's right.
Right. So you have to realize times have changed. And when dealing with culture, find out who in your organization has the most influence. When I was middle school, AP, I found out, this sounds really mean, but it was like four mean girls, four of them. They ran the school. They had more influence than I did. These four girls who should have been high schoolers was all behind the grade. They looked like grown-ups, but they were in the eighth grade, and they were mean as a rattlesnake. And everyone was scared of them. Teachers, custodians, lunchroom workers, students, parents, everyone was scared of them. So I made them our leadership team. You guys are going to be our leader. And I was very serious. You guys are going to be our leadership team. You're going to be our leadership liaisons. Everything's going to run through you all. And so you're going to wear these shirts on Friday, blah, 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 blah. You're going to be in charge of this hallway. Whenever there's a fight, there's this. So everything that I knew that they were going to get in trouble for, I put them in charge of. They had all the influence. Our referrals went down overnight because I can walk around. I have the title. I have the degrees. You're going to listen to me. No, they're not. They're going to listen to this girl who they're afraid of, who they look up to, they want to be like. They're going to listen to them. And when they are we made them hall monitors, and they were lunchroom monitors. How can you cause trouble when you're the lunchroom monitor? I made you a snitch, and you don't even realize it. You know, and so that's I think you find who has the most influence and you piggyback on them. And in high school, it's a head football coach.
Let's wrap this back to some furniture and, you know, space. And, you know, we work with clients all the time and we talk about active learning environments and, you know, allowing the educators to be improvisational within their space when they have furniture that can move with their lesson plan throughout the day and give them a little bit more creativity outside just maybe their board that they do at the beginning of each year, you know, do some little more creativity throughout the day. Do things like that truly affect the culture of the organization the way we think they do? Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
No, they do. If you would have been with me last week in Cheney, Ohio, we're going to speak with them 14 times in the next 12 months, some Zoom, mostly in person. We have a contract with them. We're very excited about working with everyone in their organization, including the parents in the community. They're in Youngstown, Ohio. And last week, we used the acronym PUSH, plan until something happens. And so it's like a lot of P words, plan, pivot, provide, prepare. It's a bunch of P words. But we gave an analogy about a kid being in a swing, and I'll talk about that later. But I suggested that every 6 weeks, they change the look of their classroom. And I gave them the reasons why. And one of the reasons was to keep the students on their toes, so it's not the same boring environment every time. The other reason was you want to, I hate these words, Jedi mind trick, but you want to manipulate the seating chart. You want to, sometimes the strongest student need to sit with the weakest student, and they don't need to know that. So if you're going to do, they use this term in education, turn and talk or group project, you know that this quarter is going to be a lot of group work. Why not put your strongest student with your weakest student and have them work together, and they don't even realize that one is strong academically and one is not. But that's going to be an unintimidating way for that weak student to get a little bit better by spending time with that strong student. But that doesn't happen if one of them is sitting in the top corner of the left of your classroom and the other one is sitting way in the back. So we have to move them around. Then some students, especially middle and elementary school, they can't see the board and they don't know that they need glasses. They may not go to the optometrist. Their family may not be able to go to the doctor. So they don't know that they have issues with their depth perception. So you have to move them around to learn those things. And then, you know this, the look of a room. When I was at Rutherford High School, we were able to write down the classrooms and talk about the look of the room and then see which teachers had different results. So some teachers go overboard with their room. They turn into an oasis. You know, we've seen black lights. We've seen teachers put stuff over the windows so there's no lighting. We've seen people make more lighting somehow in their room. So all these different things, you have to ask yourself what works for you. And what are you trying to do? Some people play music, low, slow music. Some play exciting music. So you create the culture of your room, and the culture takes place before you open your mouth. And one huge part of that is the way the furniture is set up in the room. How does the room look? You can make a small room look bigger with the way you set it up. You can make a big room look smaller. You can move bookshelves. You can move stools. You can move benches. Like, there's so many things. You got to ask yourself, do I want them sitting on a bench? All right, what's the positives of that? What's the negatives? Do I want them in a chair? How many left-handed students do I have? If I have 5 left-handed students and all my desks are right-handed desks, then that's going to be a problem for those 5 students. Are those 5 students important? Of course they are. And so I think the strategic planning of the furniture helps. Let me tell you something about being a head coach, Tim, that you probably never thought of. So I've been a head coach at 7 different high schools. A lot of the principles I use now in my speaking. I've used in business. I was at a school once, and a guy said to me, he said, stop apologizing for being a coach. Because this is a very prestigious private school, Montgomery, Alabama, and I was with them for a week. And about the third day, I said, I apologize. I keep using sports analogies, guys. He said, stop apologizing because that stuff works. And he had worked in a football organization. He knew they worked. But one thing a football coach does, I design the uniforms. So I'm a designer. I've changed the logo in 3 schools. I've changed the colors. They were yellow gold. I made them Vegas gold. So now they know they're Vegas gold. They were royal blue. We went to navy blue. So you look at royal blue and orange, that's the Florida Gators. You look at navy blue and orange, that's the Virginia Cavaliers. That's a huge difference. One school, they had a bumblebee like Georgia Tech. I gave them a wasp like Arizona State University. Alabama State University. All those things are part of, like, one school was Bullock County. We used the Boston College, BC. So I've been going there for years, but now that's their BC because they had 50 different BCs. So that's part of it. But the other part of it is a functioning weight room that deals with furniture. And so we had a lobby and a weight room and a classroom to watch film. And everyone liked benches in their film room. I didn't like benches because, one, I wanted them to have back support. These benches didn't have any back support. And two, I didn't want them laying on each other and falling, laying down. I didn't want that. So we should strategically have furniture that we can move and manipulate. Even with a church, I was part of a church planning group and they wanted pews. I said, it would be a lot better if you guys got chairs because then you can change the room space. With pews, you're stuck, And so furniture is a huge part of building the culture of any organization. When you walk in, what does the furniture say? The furniture is screaming when someone walks in. It's saying, welcome in, or it's saying, why are you here? And you get to choose that communication through the furniture.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, that old school row and column, that we all learned in, and we were carving the desks with our names and our, I think that just, to me, just goes, oh, that's not where I want to be. But to your point, I think that flexibility is really important to be able to have furniture that is flexible. I would almost say even more so in education environments than in corporate environments, but everybody's looking for that flexibility. In their space.
Tim, Google this school, Ohana Institute. My wife is a school counselor there. She's been there for 70 years. Their class sizes are no larger than 7. So when I first went there, I didn't like it at all. I was like, this is not school, because I had to have a paradigm shift. In my mind, school was hallways, lockers, desk and rows, dry erase board or chalkboard or smart board in front of the classroom. So you walk in these classrooms, none of the classes are like that. Not one classroom is like, some of them have high chairs, some of them have bean bags. They had big bean bags as a chair. So I asked my wife, I said, so where did the students sit? She said, you see the 7 bean bags, they sit in those. I said, and learn? Oh yeah. But no class was alike. Every class was different. And so they had the data to prove that moving the furniture around and selecting different types of furniture aided to the culture of their environment. And so they created the culture. And unfortunately, traditional schools won't adopt this because that would mean that we don't know it all. Right. Who wants to work with a know-it-all? Yeah. So I look at that school, man. You can go in there, you can click, and you can look at the classrooms, and it's gonna blow your mind, man. The art on the wall, all of those things are part of it. Look, when we go into a school, one thing we look at when they ask us to do an overhaul is we look at the art on the wall. What's on the wall? Plain walls say you're a plain school.
Yeah.
Put up the state championship of 1976. Put their picture up. Paint your school colors. Paint a stripe down the wall. Do something. But don't have plain walls. Who wants? I mean, I showed a picture. I did a slideshow presentation of a prison and a school, and they were the exact same. And This lady couldn't. I showed the lunch tray of a prison and the lunch tray of their school. I showed the hallway of a prison and the hallway of their school. I showed the walls of a prison and the walls of their school. Even the chairs that they sat in the lunchroom had a little round ovals. You sit in them, you fold them up. No, so I encourage people to choose the difficult right over the easy wrong. It's easy to do what everybody else is doing. It's easy to take the easy way out. But why don't you go talk to someone else and ask them what kind of furniture are they using and why do they use that kind of furniture and what's worked for them and what hasn't worked for them and see if you can take your organization to another level.
So as we round this up, again, you mentioned the book, your book, Culture Creators. Great book. In there, you talk about this, and I'm a firm believer of this point as well, that is, you know, that which isn't measured won't grow. You gotta measure things to grow. So my question to you is, you talk about in there about measuring culture. So how would you, as just kind of to wrap this conversation up, how would you suggest people, what would you think that they should use as tools to measure culture?
Well, SurveyMonkey is something that's free and on the internet. We've used SurveyMonkey before. We use what the schools call exit slips, where we ask cultural questions to the students and the faculty and the staff. And as they're leaving the meeting, we ask them to write one sentence on there. But what I've seen work the most is compare and contrast. So when you compare and contrast, you ask yourself, you know, give me the top five furniture companies. And this is the person that works for your furniture company. Give me the top five furniture companies in your opinion. And then we ask, in another meeting, you know, give me the top five restaurants according to furniture. Give me the top three hospitals according to furniture. So we ask specific questions to get the qualitative data that we want, because everyone compares whether they want to or not. Every restaurant sells chicken, but when you want a chicken sandwich, you go to a certain restaurant for a reason. So we always compare and contrast without even realizing it. And we're saying, well, last year, Michigan was better than such and such. How do you know that? A guy that I worked with taught me this. When I was a coach, and I hope this answers your question, we had a retreat every year for our coaches, 3-day retreat. On the last day, I would say, guys, let me know what our record's going to be. So I would give them a cue card, and I would have them write down our record. Out of our 10-game regular season, write down the record. And later in the year, right before we start our first game, I would bring it out. And I would say, somebody believes we're going to lose 3 games this year. Why are you here? You wrote down 7-3. So are we going to lose this weekend? Because if so, I just won't practice this week. I'll go fishing. Like, which games are we going to lose? Another one. Somebody wrote down 8-2. Why would you be here if you think we're going to lose 2 games? Like, how can you come to work every day and you already said 2 times we're going to lose? Do you know who those teams are? So we can go ahead and tell them don't come? And so What we did, we compare and contrast expectations with reality. Well, if you're an organization, you got to really believe that your reality is we're going to be the very best every single day. So the way you measure culture is you find out what do those teachers expect. I had a teacher tell me, Coach, these students can't learn. I was a coach. She was a guidance counselor. She said, I don't know what you think you're doing. These students can't learn. So what she really, my interpretation was of that, I don't believe in these students. I measured the culture of her office by that statement. So the problem with measuring culture is not like measuring the combines on right now, you know, football combines on. It's not like that. It's not quantitative. There's no number attached. You measure culture qualitative. What that means is you have to look at the entire thing. And I use expectations and evaluations. And like you said, what gets measured gets done. You have to measure it over and over. You can lie to yourself. I'm losing weight. I'm losing weight. How much do you weigh? Well, I don't get on a scale, but I'm losing weight. I'm losing weight. No, you don't know if you're losing weight. So that's easy because it's a number. But how do you measure if your family's doing well? How do you measure if your organization's doing well? You have to ask difficult questions and then own it when they answer. You have to own it. 10 people can't be wrong. If 10 people in your organization are the same exact thing, they can't be wrong. So I ask people all the time, what are your expectations and are they clear? Does everyone in your organization know the expectations? Okay. How will they be evaluated on that and how often? Is that clear? Because the number one way to ruin any country when you're in war is to cut out their communication base. And if you don't have great communication in your organization, you will not be able to measure. And so to answer your question, the way that I believe you measure is you have strategic questions to ask your organization on the front end, on the back end, and you do it often. You measure often. And they're going to tell you. And so this is the last one, Tim. This is the hardest question. If you could make more money, would you work somewhere else? No one wants to ask that question.
That's right.
Right. So you, it, there's ways to do it. You don't want to ask that in front of everyone. You don't want, but there's that question needs to be asked twice a year to everyone in your organization. If now, again, if they doubled your salary, we don't want you to turn that down. We get it. But if you're going to make a little bit more money, would you work somewhere else? And if the answer is yes, we need to know why. We need to know why. Could you imagine dating someone, Tim, and she said, look, would you be upset if in a few years I found someone better and I just moved on? No, you would say, well, why not make this better? Right. Like what are you looking? What's going on? And so they have to have the mentality, I'm going to make this the best place to work so I don't ever want to leave because I'm adding value. And that's one thing that Crystal said to me once that brought me to tears. And you know Crystal, she's my main assistant, and she does all our booking. But she read some of the messages that I received from speaking. And she said, now I see it. I understood what you said. You told me that we'd make a difference. But I had a teacher, I was going to quit. The day you spoke to us, I had my letter of resignation in my purse. I was going to quit. But you reminded me why I got into this. It's not, this is going to say it. It's not the adults, it's the children. Because she was very upset with her administration. Right. Another person said, I had already planned to take my life. These are real text messages. I had already planned to take my life. And so I would tell the crew, we're never going to post these or anything, but that's the power of words.
Right.
And so that reminds us that we're chasing impact, not income. See, if the person will answer that question for you and say, yeah, I would leave, then you're not the person we need anyway. And so when someone, right, exactly. Right, I'll make you a customer. And so when someone calls and says, you know, we can't afford that, and they're in a rural town or a small town, we really need the message. Crystal reminds me, you know what? They can't afford it, but they need the message. So we're chasing impact, not income. And so we go. We go to Freedom, Oklahoma. I'm going to say this. I'm going to be quiet. Guess how many students are in Freedom, Oklahoma, kindergarten through 12th grade? Guess.
500.
26.
Whoa.
Google it. Freedom, Oklahoma. They're red and white. The nicest people in the world. We went to Freedom, Oklahoma, and we went to Protection, Kansas in the same day. Two states, two different schools, they're close to each other in proximity, very, very small. They couldn't afford us to come out there, but their story was so compelling, and Crystal reminded me that we're chasing impact, not income. They could never have somebody come to their school and speak and spend a day with them. I said, well, they will next month. We'll be there. And so I'm not saying that to brag on me. I'm saying that because we know what our culture is, it dictates our behavior. If we don't know our culture, then other ancillary things would dictate our behavior. Money. Somebody called the other day, wanted to pay us a lot of money to tell jokes. I said, I'm not a comedian. Yes, you are. I watch your videos. You're hilarious. I said, yeah, we tell jokes. They're like the commercials of our presentation. They're to keep you engaged. But my goal is not to make you laugh. Nothing against comedians, but I think that's empty. I want to add value. I don't want to show up to your table with an empty pitcher and ask you need some more sweet tea. I want to come with a pitcher and I want to overflow your sweet tea. If I make you laugh in the process, that's an added bonus. But we turned the bag down. We turned the money down because we know our culture. The question I would say to all the listeners, do you know your culture? And if I ask the people in your organization, do they know your culture? And if they don't, everything rises and falls on leadership. Don't be mad at me. Talk to John Maxwell.
Well, with that, I think that's a great place for us to put an end to this. And thank you so much. Hey, just for everybody listening, do yourself a favor and find Willie Spears on social media. It is fantastic to follow. And honestly, his words do inspire. And I think you'll be blessed by him every time you get to see him. But Willie, I sure am blessed every time I get to talk to you. And I hope this is the beginning of a long relationship of getting together and talking. And I know we're going to have you back at Working Spaces. So thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you for what you do, man. You're making a difference. And I never seen an organization like yours have the passion that it has for people. And so I appreciate what you do.
Thank you.